Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right. Well, first half, an epic rant with Mark Garagos. I think you're going to circle this one. And we get into JVR All Balls as well. Plenty going on. First, I'll tell you about blindsgalore.com. Huge summer scorcher sale all this week. Up to 50% off everything. One of their biggest sales of the year. So hurry. Go to blindsgalore.com. The sale is going to end next Wednesday, August 5th. Over 2 million windows covered. 100% custom window treatments online. Made to your exact measurements. Delivered right to your door. Blinds, shades, shutters, drapes. Even blinds that connect to your smartphone or Amazon Alexa device. I have the shades that are hooked up to the Alexa in my bedroom. They're powered. It's awesome. You charge them up like you charge a cell phone. Do it a couple times a year. They work. No wires, no nothing. They got a build a blind tool that helps you create custom window treatments, and you can see exactly what they look like before you buy. They're the best. It's Blinds Galore, right, Dawson?
BlindsGalore.com makes it easy to get the designer blinds and shades you've always wanted without the designer price tag, especially during their huge summer scorcher event when everything is 50% off. Visit BlindsGalore.com today and let them know Adam sent you. That's BlindsGalore.com.
Coming to Live by Live Thursday, July 30th, Darius Rucker's Darius and Friends virtual concert benefiting St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Catch an exclusive one-time-only performance by Darius Rucker live from the Grand Ole Opry stage featuring guest appearances by Clint Black and Tracy Lawrence. All proceeds from the show benefit St. Jude, so get your tickets today at livexlive.com/Darius and tune in July 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern only on Live by Live.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today from The Con, filmmakers Eric Vaughn and Patrick Lovell. With Gina Grad on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, Dave Damashek's back for good sports, and the deaf frat guy drops by for some JV or all balls. And now, heading back to Texas to lay down what the facts is. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to mend to get on our last show before we head into our best of week. But thank you. And now's the time during the best of to turn someone on to the show. At 11 years plus, a great, great product. So share it with a friend. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian. The DFG is here. So I'll be transparent. I just knocked out something sort of colossal with Mark Garagos that we're going to slide in here that has to do with me and the city and the government. And Mark is going bananas the whole time. So I thought you guys might want to enjoy that. And so we'll share that with you. This is me and Mark Garagos from a half hour earlier in this same studio from Reasonable Doubt, of course. So enjoy this, and it's not a 2 minute piece. It's a long form piece, but it really hits a crescendo. So enjoy that, and then we'll come back with the DFG. Enjoy. I moved from one house to another, and there was an issue with drainage.
Quite a house, by the way.
The new house is quite a house.
Quite a house. Quite a street. I mean, it's just, it's one of my favorite places. You don't hear the, do you really hear the freeway from
that? Not really. Yeah. Not inside the house. If you go out, you can hear it a little. But it's great. Yeah. So there was a drainage issue, as I've discussed before. And it wasn't my fault at all. I did nothing. There was just, the old house was at a sort of dip in the road. Kaylin's got some pictures, but there was a drainage issue, and it needed to be taken care of, and the city wouldn't take – well, there's a video of it working now. Oh no, there's okay, a video wait, of it screwed up, right? Right. Okay, so right. –
No, the video is of it
– screwed up.
It looks screwed up right now, right?
This is a picture.
Oh, it's a picture of it.
The only video we have is of it working.
Yeah.
We have several pictures of it screwed up.
There's a – whatever the picture is.
Did you make an insurance claim?
It created a lake. No.
Did you do a 910 notice to the municipality for a claim?
See, Mark, here's my problem. everyone thinks I'm an asshole, but the reality is when shit happens, I just go fix it. I've never filed an insurance claim. I've never talked to anybody. I'm going to go fix it. I'll go fix it. It's the city's fault.
It's totally the city's fault. I can see it right there. The whole thing looks like the city designed it to flood at the lip or the apron, right?
Right. So it flowed through my backyard. It flooded the backyard, and then it flooded the neighbor's yard. And the neighbor behind me,
I'm looking at what is the drainage, right?
Right. Okay. The neighbor behind me had issues, and he claimed it was my fault, even though it was just the water passing by my house, flooding my backyard, and then flooding his driveway. But either way,
I love how it's your fault. How long have you been there?
3 years.
Like you invented rainfall and water?
Right. So,
by the way, and what are you, 500, maybe 1,000 yards from Devil's Gate Dam?
Right.
Right. The largest collection of water canals feeding into one area in Southern California.
So the neighbor claimed because I put a pool in the backyard, I had screwed up the drainage, even though I never touched anything. I simply put a pool in. There's no drainage, anything. Just everything was the same. I added a pool. He says that's when it started. Either way, voodoo science, fine. I'll take care of it. So he got himself a drainage engineer. And the drainage engineer, that was the first $1,300, came over, looked at it, and said, here's how you fix it. I've drawn up a plan. I have a schematic. The city was not interested in fixing it. It was on the street or my property. I didn't bother. I just looked at his schematic.
Can you tell me on that picture where the drainage engineer said the issue was?
He said the problem was this. There's a big square drain.
Okay.
And the square drain
over by where the curb is?
Yes, next to the curb. And the drain is just a grill.
Okay.
And the grill is 2 foot by 2 foot, and it's a big iron grill, and it sits on the ground. And it works momentarily. But what happens is all the super sticky oak leaves come rolling down the hill and roll across the street. And these are these very sticky, thick.
No, I've got the same problem. You know, in our submerged garage area, there's one drain there. And it's the same thing. There's nothing but oak trees. And when that drain gets filled up, all of a sudden it's a flood or a basin down there.
It gets filled almost immediately because the leaves fall and they sit on the ground. And it's dry, and then the rain comes. So the first wave literally is just leaves, and they clog it immediately. And then once it clogs, piles and piles of water just go over the top of it and flood the backyard and blah, blah, blah. So the neighbor, Armo guy.
Armo, typical. Is it the fat Armo?
No, it's the good. This good Armo.
Good Armo. Okay.
Good Armo. He's the Hot Rod magazine guy.
Oh, that's a good guy. I'm talking about – actually, may not be Armo. Maybe that other guy, phony guy who wears the fat guy with flip-flops who assaults you on the trail. You know, fat fuck with flip-flops. You've seen this guy because he's confronted you and me.
So this guy's Armo, and he's one of the good ones. And so what he would do is get up when it would start raining real hard, and he'd go out there, and he'd take the grill, and we'd lift it up, and he would slide it out of the way about 6 inches. He'd leave like a 6-inch open. And then all the clogged up oak leaves couldn't do it anymore, and all the water would just go down the opening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of like a Drano without the Drano.
Problem solved.
Right.
So what I did is I said, look, I'll take that grill. Mm-hmm. I'll just have one of my guys cut 6 inches off it. We'll just place it back. It'll just create that slot, and it'll all drop down the slot.
That's interesting. It's kind of like I've seen things like that are designed that way in the first place.
Well, it's essentially it's the grill that's causing the cloggage. So if you remove the grill, this guy just slid it back. Mm-hmm. But I just cut it off and dropped it in.
That was smart.
I said, problem solved. And then the pain in the ass neighbor behind says, no.
Non-Arma?
No. Pain-o.
Oda.
Pain in the ass.
Pain in the ass.
He's like, you got to build this. And I said, I already fixed it. And
he said, this is the guy who hired the drainage engineer?
Well, he didn't hire him. He sent him over.
I sent him over.
I essentially hired him because I paid him. So I said, it's already fixed. Now, you know how many conversations I have with people who don't fucking believe what I'm telling them all the time? The drainage guy and the pain in the ass neighbor are going, I don't think this 6-inch slot idea is going to work. And I said, I know it's going to work because the dude who lives here does it every time there's a big rain and I drive past it and it works perfectly. And they go, I don't know. And I go, I do know because I've seen it. I've seen it. I've seen it. I live in this house and I come out and I see how effective it is. And he goes, and they both go, and they go, here's the plan. Just do the plan. I don't trust. I don't know if you're maybe liars think you lie. I don't know what the fuck it is. So I just look at the plan. I got guys and I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to knock it out.
And so, what did the plan do?
The plan built a little dam behind it. There's pictures of it, Kalen, of the front side of the thing. And there's even closer pictures as well. The front, what it did is it built a little dam in the back and it put a lid, a concrete lid on top of it. And then we picked up the grill and got rid of it altogether.
Okay, so now it's just an open, nobody can fall into that hole.
No,
that's why you've got the little cover.
Every fucking sewer in the entire street is built that way, right? You see the curbside sewer.
Right.
It's a slot. Right. It's an opening.
It's a slot like you would normally have in the sidewalk.
Right. Yeah. So I did it at my expense, and I did it the same way.
Put a little bench on it.
Engineer told me to do it. Put a plaque. This is where Adam killed himself. He'll be missed. So,
or a star.
Then I went past it, and so now what happened is I sold the house, and the city, of course, the pain in the ass neighbor in the back, and the city and everything. This is right on what the hell street?
Georgian?
Berkshire.
Yeah, it's on Berkshire. So I said, everyone's a pain in the ass, and of course, they had to do this $5,000 escrow thing, where we're going to put $5,000 in escrow until the city signs off on this.
Oh, God.
So I go into the city, and I show them the plan that the certified engineer, drainage engineer, drew up, and I say, this is what he did. This is what I did. May you then sign off on this so I can get my $5,000 out of escrow. And they look at the plan and they go, we don't think it's going to work.
Yeah.
By the way, your bottom of the class makes $53,000 a year. Engineers disagree with the guy who works in the fucking open market and has to produce. Oh, that'll be good. It's like your court appointed attorney disagrees with Mark Garagos. Okay. Well, that's a fanciful thing. So you imbeciles who've basically bought into socialism, I'm supposed to listen to you experts who are fucking wrong about everything. But okay. So there's guy don't think it's going to work. I say, I know it works. I've seen it. I've been there. I have footage of it working. I know it works. And they go, well, we don't think it's going to work. Okay. By the way, how could it not work? I pulled the thing back 6 inches. It worked perfectly. Now I got rid of the whole thing and put a dam and a lid on it.
Did the clause in the $5,000 say it had to be signed off by the city?
Yeah, it's like they filed because they filed.
Did you have a real estate lawyer do this or a real estate agent?
I think it was an agent did it.
Yeah, the agent did it. Make a claim on the agent's policy. I'm going to get shot by the agent.
So they look at it. They look at the plan and they go, we don't like it. We don't think it's going to work. By the way, based on what? I've removed the fucking grill. I put a thing in the back, and the guy's a licensed, bonded drainage engineer, and I just executed his schematic. Why is it not going to work? They had a bad feeling about it.
Did they bellyache that you didn't get a permit first?
And no, they said, I'll tell you what. I said, so what do you want me to do? Jack the whole thing out and put it back to how it was when it didn't work? And somebody, some sensible, normal mind, the kind of mind that would work in the private sector but rarely works for those over-officious assholes over there, says, you know what? Why don't we just wait till the next rain and we'll see if it works?
What a startling idea.
And
the only person who's got a downside to that is you, whose $5,000 is sitting there.
But I say, This is a rare piece of common sense and reasonability coming from an office filled with just people who are drunk with their own fucking power and stupidity. Otherwise, they wouldn't end up there.
Right.
So the guy says, well, why don't we just wait for the next rain? We'll see how it works. And if it works, then we'll sign off on it. And I said, well, now that sounds reasonable. And by the way, no cost to you guys. I spent all the money on this.
Right.
But fine. So I get a call from the realtor 4 months later, and it's like, the owner of the house got slapped with a thing, a permit, that's a violation, and blah, blah, blah.
I knew that was going to happen.
Of course. I said, what happened to the part where we're going to see when it rained, and then we're going to see how effective it was? Meanwhile, in that time, it did rain. It rained hard, and it worked perfectly. I said, what happened to that?
Yeah, it probably rained perfectly when my place flooded.
So I said, where's that guy? He's on medical leave.
Because
he's not around.
He went running into a cement wall because he couldn't take another minute of working for the city.
So I said, okay, so where's the new guy? And it's like, well, he says they're going to have an engineer that want to meet you over there. How long do these emails go back? And first off,
sure.
let's just show the tape of it working, by the way. I just drove over there during a rainstorm. Normally there'd just be a huge dam. There'd be a huge lake. And now right. It's all just flowing straight. Normally there's
a
huge
Berkshire,
lake.
That's Georgian.
There's a huge lake on that. Is it Berkshire or Georgian?
No, that's Georgian. That's the Georgian house.
That's the Georgian house.
Yeah. All right. Normally there's a massive lake. There's no lake there now. It's draining perfectly. Okay, I film it
right,
so I can show the idiots at the city what's going on. So
I can chime in here with a timeline for all this if you'd
like. Yes. Right.
So the neighbor originally sent all those pictures of the drainage issues. That was January 17th, 2019. Okay. You were working with that engineer between like January and March to get the front of the grill cut off like you talked about. And then in June of 2019 – while you're trying to sell that property and it's an escrow, that's when they're talking about the storm runoff issues. In July, that's when you start doing your next round.
I have so many questions here. Number one, I assume somebody either disclosed the drainage issue in escrow.
Yes.
You had fixed it prior to the sale closing?
Probably prior to closing.
It's on the timeline?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so if it's prior to closing, and why was there a $5,000 holdback?
Who the fuck knows? Everyone's an overficious fucking idiot, and I'm sorry, but it's all city people and lawyers and real estate people, and everyone's just covering their ass constantly.
You should have told you know how you would have solved this problem? Just a little unsolicited advice. Next time, tell the real estate agent to hold back the $5,000 from their commission. Then you would have seen this issue solved. You wouldn't be in this. Because I would have asked this question. This would have been my question. Why is Adam holding back the $5,000 out of his money? Do it out of your stinking commission, which was, by the way, a substantial amount of money. And we already disclosed it. And it's an as-is sale. And get out of my face.
Well, again, if I had a time machine. So I'm in a kind of let's get it done mode all the time. Like, okay, do it. Here we go. What's next? Now, if you work for the fucking city, you're just going to die in your shitty cubicle and you don't give a fuck about anyone, time, money.
Doesn't matter.
The cost of business. You don't care. You're on an unlimited... You are an unlimited time zone because you don't care about me or my $5,000 or you and your license and the business and reopening or whatever. It doesn't matter.
None of it matters.
We'll all do it. You guys have a fucking metronome that's been dipped in liquid nitrogen and you don't give two fucks. But here's the thing. Hey, fucking turtles with polio, we want to go out and live our life. You have chosen this sedentary life of sitting around in a shitbox with other like-minded idiots and doing nothing. You chose that life. I didn't choose that life. So now you're imposing your fucking horrible life decisions on me. So you were fucking 128th in your junior college class and I now have to live your pathetic life? How about you get your shit together and start mimicking my life?
That's part of the reason, you know, we've made the argument a zillion times here on Reasonable Doubt that you should give prosecutors a budget. I think you ought to do the same thing with the city. It shouldn't be where you should be allowed to deficit spend or that you can exceed your budget or anything else. They should just be made to they get laid off if they can't get it done. You can't get a decision you're done. You don't get to go out on you know, bullshit medical leave, or you don't get to go out on bullshit disability leave or any other.
They have no interest in getting anything done. And also they become adversarial, which is like, you dared do something without us granting you permission and without His Highness coming down from His golden mountain to grant you and decree you. And by the way, you didn't pay us. You just fixed the problem. Why didn't we get paid? Right. The fucking mob. It becomes adversarial. Like, I don't know about this. I'm handing you a plan that an engineer, I don't like it.
So what happens now, though? What's the last thing on the
nothing,
timeline?
Nothing, you wish it was the last thing.
Nothing happens for 6 months. And then eventually I reach out to the realtor and I go, what the fuck is going on? There's $5,000 of my money. It's sitting in an escrow. What is going on? This problem's been fixed for a year. Tell the city, just fucking sign off on it, and I want my money back. All right.
So, again, just to have
what
the timeline
day was that
here.
When you
well, now
the
she
demand.
Reaches out to the guy in the city, and he's not replying.
We're missing some good stuff here.
Okay,
Ace, we're jumping ahead here.
Go ahead.
So the second fix project completed in September. That video that we just watched of the rainfall and everything working perfectly, that was
with the little bridge.
With the little bridge. That
on
was in
Georgia, not Berkshire.
That's
sorry.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Apologies for the confusion there.
Okay, because I was so confused when I was looking at it.
I lived on both streets. That's why Matt was confused. Go ahead.
Okay. That video was shot in late November.
Of 19.
And then January 2020 of this year, this is when the realtor says, I hate to bother you with this. We need to address it. The new owners keep getting mail from the city regarding violation of permit on the drainage issue.
By the way, they're Johnny on the spot when it comes to keep sending fucking notices to the current owner. When I call them, they don't pick up the fucking phone. But they're Johnny on the spot when they need to fucking shit with you. Fucking idiots. It's like they're fucking jackrabbits and turtles. It's just they're turtles when I need them. All right.
So you reply.
So what is the violation, though, when they're sending
this? We don't
know. Do they cite anything?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. I reply.
The drain now works perfectly. There is no more lake forming. If we put it back to the way it was, then it will go back to flooding. I don't know what's up with the city because the city said they were going to monitor it and see if it works, and it works perfectly. I have video of it working perfectly in a hard rainstorm. Can you deal with the city forward along these ideas? I don't know why they would tell me they were going to monitor and see if it would work and then send summons to the house. In February, the realtor replies, sorry, see below. They're saying no to the correction you made. In order to get everyone off your back and get your $5,000 released from escrow, I believe it's best to remove the work that you did and have it put back to its original condition.
Can you imagine?
Hold on, I wrote a video. What was my reply to that?
This is a golden reply here.
To her and the city.
I hope somebody in your office has the sense to realize that this has completely solved a huge and ongoing problem. The lake that had formerly formed in that dip in the road is now 100% drained during the heaviest rainstorms. Why would you brainiacs want to undo a problem that was fixed 100%? I don't care anymore. I'll sledgehammer out the work I did and replace the drain, and you guys can enjoy a lake at the dip next time it rains. This was not something I cooked up in my garage. This was professionally engineered by a drainage expert. But if you want me to take a sledgehammer and put it back to the way it didn't work, I'll be happy to do it. Although it frightens me to live in a city where such conclusions are drawn. Good luck. I pray we never talk about this subject again. And for the record, I have 2 more pages of emails.
Okay.
It's going
Wait,
to keep,
what date was that?
That email was basically the first week of February. And then silence all of March, all of April, and most of May. It's not until, I'll point out, on Adam's birthday.
Is the real estate agent that you're communicating with Adam's agent or the buyer's agent?
My agent.
Your agent. Okay.
Adam writes to this lady on his birthday, his personal achievement day.
My birthday.
Can you?
When do I get my $5,000 out of
escrow? Can you write down, before I excoriate, write down the agent's name on there before I say it out loud.
All right, go ahead.
So she then says that she pinged the city. I'm looking at other emails on May 27th, June 4th, June 25th. We asked what was happening, and that's when we found out the guy you were working with is on medical leave.
All right. Now, sorry, as of, I don't know how to spell her last name.
As of July 15th.
Oh, I don't know. That's not who I thought it was.
I'm misspelling her last name.
So July 15th, she's working with someone else at the city.
Okay.
July 28th, here's an email she sent.
July 28th. This is breaking news.
Yeah, this is just a couple days ago. Adam, I've been going round and round with the city and the engineer that met with us at the property. He recommended the dam that you built. The city is not letting this go. They want to make a bigger deal with engineering reports and permits. At this point, I think the easiest way to get your $5,000 is to have it removed. And then she forwarded an email from this public works guy. As the director of the public works for the city, it was I who recommended removal of the top.
It is I, King Dipshit.
Wait, can we identify
fucking
this
King
genius?
Dipshit.
Who is this genius?
It is I. It is I who makes $44,000 a year and lives in a shit box. It is I who has deemed this. It is he who lives in a community who overrules a community where he couldn't afford a fucking outhouse. You couldn't afford a fucking outhouse in this fucking community, Prince Dipshit. But it is he. It is he who rules. He's come down to the mountain with a scroll, a golden scroll, and he's ruled. He's decreed that all the subjects in the land must suffer because it is he who picked a horrible path in life and never gets laid. It is he. It is he who chose this direction. And now, since we're all just humble serfs, in this retarded kingdom, now we should all be punished because you, knave, you defied me by doing work at your own expense and correcting a problem in my kingdom without coming and bowing at my hem and asking His Highness's permission. And you shall face the gallows because of this transgression that you've done in front of me. Where's my mutton chop? Where's the jester? Dancing girl? Someone draw me a bath. Who's peeling my grapes? This is an outrage. An outrage that you would wander into my kingdom with your checkbook and endeavor to act as an American in my kingdom without first checking with me and giving me money. I want pieces of eight. I want to bang your maiden. Otherwise, he shall decree that this is a transgression against his honor. Sorry.
I'll skip over more of his email. It ends with, as I previously offered, I am available to meet in the field to discuss my observations and recommendations in
detail.
Have
your seconds. Contact my seconds. And then we'll endeavor to meet in the field of battle, in the field of honor.
Know, I don't know that this guy realizes, you know
what? What did he say about, what was his engineering stuff? He
didn't. Based upon my review and observation, I could not find any records that the existing drainage system was designed to any standard. As a result, I recommend removing the top so that runoff at this location has a free path to travel as it previously did.
How about the fucking observation of showing up when it fucking rains, Your Highness, and taking a look at an empty lake. How about that option? That'd be a keen observation,
remove
would it not be?
Remove the top, which would create the liability for somebody
falling into the hole.
This guy has obviously never run this by the city attorney of La Cañada, because the city attorney would go apoplectic with this.
So well, now, the whole thing ends with Adam's reply, Jesus Christ, I'm moving to Texas.
I'm not fucking kidding, right? What am I to do?
This is one letter. Matt, just forward it to me.
I'll scan the documents for
you. Scan
right,
the
but
documents.
Here's what I'm saying.
I'm just
not
gonna
everyone
write
is best friends with Mark Garagos. There's regular people that just want to pay taxes and do shit. You know what I'm saying?
You know the problem? The only person that gives a shit is you. And the only reason you give a shit is because it's your $5,000.
That is 1,000,000% correct. Everyone else doesn't give two shits.
They don't give two shits. They don't care. It's not money out of their pocket.
I get it. But when you work for the government and you work for the city, does do I have to pay you to care, or can you do the fucking job?
Like, no, it, it, no.
You know, when the, just... when you call the firefighters or the paramedics, you have to stand in your bathrobe at the end of your driveway with a checkbook, or can they just do their fucking job?
You know, it's amazing. If everything worked like the fire department, it's one of the reasons I love owning the fire station, because they are the ultimate. They make it work. You don't hear a lot of excuses. They get a call, they show up, they make it work.
Right.
It is government at its best. And if you take that model and lay it next to the permit, the building and safety, it fully exposes just what a problem it is.
Well,
there's no urgency.
The problem, yes, the problem is the relationship. They look at you as basically, they look at it as they're cops and you're criminals.
Yeah.
That's not the relationship they should be. It's like, we're cops, you're cops, and we pay your salary.
Right.
That's the relationship you should have.
Everybody should be, government should run like fire departments.
I totally agree, and a pox on everyone who wants to grow government, because this is what you get. You have dumb people who have power. And when you have dumb people with power, this is how they act.
The problem with government and what happens is that there's no course correction. The course correction tends to get away.
Well, Mark, this got to be the worst day ever for you, because Mark showed up footloose and fancy free, talking on the phone, having a good old time. And 10 minutes after he was here, I was borrowing his jet to go to Texas. Now he has to,
while you're
he has
flying,
to compose a very harshly worded letter to send to the city at La Cañada to threaten them. Give me my $5,000.
But I'll tell you, next time you do one of these deals and somebody proposes a holdback, do me a favor, text me or email, and I'll tell you who to hold back the money from, because that'll solve the problem.
Mark, you know how I know your time is precious, and I hate to utilize you, especially for free. But speaking of that, if we could get that letter out, lickety-split. I'll tell you what.
While you're flying and reclining on with Ricardo flying you to San Antonio, don't worry. I'll be dictating that letter to Margo.
I'd like to know it was out before we went wheels up.
Before wheels up, I was going to do it midair.
I don't want it weighing on me. You know what I mean? I want to relax, enjoy the mini bar, listen to my earbuds, and not really have this a heavy heart. You know what I mean?
So
I just want to just sort of know that it's been sent before we go wheels up. All right. So back to Earth with the deaf frat guy. Thank you. By the way, best thing ever. I walked in here an hour ago. Mark was sitting on the sofa, and he looked at me and he goes, where are you guys going? And I said, we're going to San Antonio. And he goes, okay, I think you can take my jet. And I said, okay. And then, you know, Chris and Mike, you're on your own. And he's like, no, all three of you. And I said, okay.
Ooh,
when do we leave? When do we have to be at the airport? And he's like, I don't know. When do you want to go? And I go, I don't know. I guess around 11:30 with the time difference. He's like, fine, 11:30 or 11 or 12. It doesn't matter. I was like, and then what? And he's like, Burbank Airport. I was like, oh. Fucking A, Burbank Airport, San Antonio. We couldn't even fly into San Antonio. We were going to fly into Austin and drive to San Antonio, Southwest, LAX.
Outhouse of the penthouse.
I know.
Whether he asked for it or not, which I'm sure he didn't, you are going to have to grant him some sort of sexual favor.
I know. I might even bank a few for the next ask.
Sure.
So that's good
amazing.
News. Deaf Rat Guy is with us. DFG.
Oh, hell yeah. I had my Do Not Disturb hat on.
Oh, you had your Do Not Disturb shade on, right. Yeah.
the eye mask.
The eye mask.
I wear that shit as a mask.
Yeah. Mm. Where, how's the quarantine treating you?
Well, it treated my meat pretty well. I've been beating myself raw.
You've been beating your meat a lot. I think it's rarely discussed on Rachel Maddow, but that has to be a subject that near and dear to most people's hearts. I mean, it's got to be up 77%, right, Maverick?
Hell yeah.
were we going to do a little JV or all balls? And I got to set the table with Maverick. He was a seventh year senior at USC when we met you.
I think maybe I was fifth year.
Fifth year when we met you. I knew it was an odd number. Yeah. And then, but 2 years later when we spoke to you, you were a seventh year senior at and then you started your own fraternity house.
Hell yeah, Delta Fu.
Right, because you couldn't. Did you rush other houses and you couldn't get into them?
No, dude. I was in a house at USC. I can't state the name because they'll sue my ass. But it was a schism, and we broke away and we started our own thing with a bunch of really cool dudes: Poochie, Moose, Smitty, Chugly, Mike F, Mike L,
right,
Deuce Bagel.
Yeah, I always
Mike D.
Right. So what I always said to you is
Mike W.
Right. You had all these guys named Mike. And you didn't give them a nickname. You know what I mean? You had Douchebagel and Chugly. And if you just
Poochie,
if you'd given the Mikes a nickname, you know what I mean? You wouldn't have to separate them by saying Mike L and Mike W. You know what I'm saying?
Coke Booger was Mike V.
Who was? Coke Booger?
Yeah.
Oh, that was Mike V. So you did give one of the Mikes a nickname then, right?
Well, he earned it.
Just him.
Just Coke Booger. All right. Is he still with us?
Yeah, he's doing really well. He's a day trader.
He's a day trader. Oh, so he's just at home trading. So you started your own house, Delta Fu. Yeah. You had your coat of arms. What could you describe that? The coat, I should say, of arms.
Yeah, I got the little card right here. But the coat of arms is basically the owl represents wisdom.
Owl.
The jackrabbit represents like productivity, you know, like
virility.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the owl is puking green bile to represent the bitterness of the purge of the schism.
Most people just have animals on their crest. You know, they don't have them vomiting or shitting or doing anything.
Yeah, the green is filed to represent the bitterness of the purge.
I understand. We'll put that up at adamcarolla.com so people can see the Delta Fu there.
Oh, and then there's a beer bong and a potato gun.
Right.
It means like fun and, you know, and like
all right,
warfare or whatever.
Right, beer bong, potato gun. I get it. It's actually one of the best crests ever, if you think about it. So we're going to do some JV or all balls here.
And now, Andrea presents the Deaf Frat Guy and JV or all balls.
He calls from the frat house onto the show, the Deaf Frat Guy, hearing impaired bro. He's hammered all day long with Poochie, Moose, and Mike F. They chug some fruits, shoot potato gums, and then play Okie Cookie. If something's bougie, he'll make the call. So now it's time for JV or all balls.
All right. Well, you make the call, and we'll see if we're right. JV or all balls? Here we go. Now, JV's obviously bad, and all balls is great. Go ahead.
Outside antagonizers.
Outside antagonizers. People who come, who join a rally and agitate, but not, they're not, it's not their city. It's outside.
Or their cause.
Or their cause, yeah.
Or even their cause, right. Could be the cause. They could physically come from somewhere else, or they could just be going out saying they're for Black Lives Matter and burning down liquor stores.
Sure. Umbrella man, breaking windows.
Yeah, I say that's got to be JV. I mean, that's an easy one, right? I go JV, Brian.
Yeah, I don't see an upside to this. They're making the situation worse for everyone. JV.
Yeah, it's definitely JV, because then not only is the city in shambles, but the wrong people may be getting blamed for it.
Right. JV across the board, Mav.
Hell yeah, it's JV. I remember when I told the guy that the stigma moves, I'm going to do a dance on our faces if we don't clean up those pumpkins.
Right.
And guess who did the pumpkin?
Oh, wasn't this, who was it? Another frat house?
Blake Chambers.
Blake Chambers. I hate that guy. So Blake Chambers.
Big new.
Blake Chambers is the guy who throws the Sigma Nu pumpkins and then blames it on you guys.
Yeah, they did a dance on our faces until we got, a shitload of potatoes.
Right. So Blake Chambers in this example would be an outside agitator.
He started a war between the houses that did not need to happen.
Understood. Still fresh after all these years.
Yeah. Still just like yesterday.
They did it with pumpkins, right? Yeah. Well, last time I checked, the Yukon Gold is a little harder than a pumpkin.
Oh yeah. Wow, that's tough talk. Yukon, is that the ballistic round you use in your potato gun, Yukon Gold?
Yeah, because it's that oval shape gives it good aerodynamic.
Good good muzzle velocity. All right, let's go to the next one.
A round potato. Oh, okay, I got to keep going.
Here. Yeah, new potatoes are no good. The round ones are no good. Yeah.
Russet, too starchy, too big.
Dude, I don't know if my memory is going on me, but did we do hickeys last time?
No.
Okay. I don't think so.
Hickeys.
Hickeys.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's supposed to your age.
Yeah, it used to be kind of proof positive that you were making out, and making out used to be such a thing. I don't even know. God, the notion of just what base did you get to sounds like, to me, what base did you get to sexually is to sex what a pickpocket is to crime these days, right? Like now it's like, oh, those guys just beat the shit out of that old woman for no reason. And it makes me look back and wax poetic about pickpockets or folks that way. And I feel the same way about the bases. The hickey, I don't know, a hickey circa 1979, cool in today's day and age, especially with all the Me Too stuff going on. I'm going to say JV.
Yeah, JV, there's no upside at our age.
I'm going all balls, and here's why. Adam, you kind of alluded to it. With all the crazy shit that's going on in the world and all the horror, if somebody walked into the workplace with a hickey, it would be the talk of the town. We'd be laughing. We'd be joking about it. We'd need the story. It would take our minds off of all this darkness for, 10, 15 minutes talking about the person with the hickey. It's like showing up with a puppy or a bouquet of flowers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So we have two JV and one all balls, DFG.
I'm going JV.
Oh, shocking.
I want the lady to treat me with respect, not make me look like I just went 15 rounds with a lamprey eel.
I never thought
lamprey,
of it.
Lamprey, yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, I'm with you. All right. Well, it's 1-1 with Gina and 2-0 with me and Bald. Here we go.
All right.
Okay. Grappling hooks.
Grappling hooks were a big deal when I was a young kid. Every movie started off with guys in a rope and a grappling hook, and they'd swing it around and throw it over a prison wall or throw it onto the roof of a building, and it would catch the parapet or the mansard or whatever was on the roof of the building, and then they'd scale up the rope. They always did it with
always
such...
Always successful on the first try.
Yeah, always successful on the first try. By the way, good luck to you if you're not successful with the grappling hook, because that is a 50 angry lawn darts coming down on your head. Like if you do the swing around and then throw it up and it comes up 6 inches short on the parapet of the, and it doesn't, it's coming straight down on top of you, and it's nothing but giant hooks. I think the proper one has like three big hooks, but Also, people used to climb rope with ease. I don't think criminals. I've seen a lot of criminals. These are big dudes now. I mean, the rope was a half inch thick, right? And they'd go, they'd swing it around and they'd throw it on the roof of a three-story building, and then they just grab the half-inch rope and start walking up the side of the building, like just 30 foot. Just here we go. I don't know that today's heavy set criminal could pull that one off. But I like the grappling hook. It meant a lot to me. Every action figure had a grappling hook came with it. You know, G.I. Joe's and Action Jackson and all that kind of stuff. So it's a happy memory. It's a positive part of my childhood, and I'm going to say all balls. No.
Yeah,
yes,
we're,
all
we're
balls.
On the same, yes. We're on the same page here because I'm sure in reality the grappling hook does not fulfill the promise set by TV and movies. Mm-hmm. That said, my image of it is super positive. Batman, you know, firing it up. It's so cool. It's G.I. Joe. Yeah, all balls.
All balls.
Yeah, I'm going to also have to say all balls because, like Adam alludes to a lot, you know, criminals today are lazy. They're doing this from a basement, God knows where. They're out of shape. They can't even climb up the stairs. This harkens back to a better time, more sportsmanlike way to do crime. Mm-hmm. Absolutely all balls.
Hell yeah, all balls.
All right.
Yeah. The grappling hook, the, you know, get real.
Yeah, the best, the best version of the grappling hook was the powered one where they'd fire it from the gun and just poof, you know, go up. And it always grabbed. It grabbed every time. Yeah. It would do it every time. And there was never any discussion on the ground. You know, it's like they'd shoot it up, it'd grab something, like, here we go, Stu. And it'd be like, no one ever went, maybe it's hooked on a piece of PVC pipe for a vent, for like a toilet or something. I've been on a roof a few times. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of shit up there. You know, they had that plastic owl up there who was trying to scare the seagulls away. Maybe it's hooked on his ass. Like, maybe we should yank on it a couple times. Or maybe you should go first. They never have that discussion.
Never any thought to, hey, there could be 10 guys patrolling that roof. And right. They see a grappling hook come up and they're cocking their guns.
That's right.
You know what you have to do to make those owls work? You have to have them puke green bile.
Yeah.
Like every 30 seconds to scare off the birds.
You know, as I think about it, the worst guards, the worst police force ever are the guys who guard the outside of the mansion at night in any movie. Like the guys like walking by, they're passing each other. Those guys always get taken out immediately and cleanly. They don't make a sound. They don't sound the alarm. They never return a shot. They don't put up a struggle. They just take them out. They're taken out. They're virtually worthless.
There's props.
Yeah, there's like 14 guys patrolling the outside of the mansion. And if you go at night, one guy, Chuck Norris, with no weapons, can take out all 14 guys who are heavily armed and ostensibly professional guards. But it's not like, oh, what do you do? Well, I do some balloon animals at birthday parties, but on weekends, I'm a guard.
I guard the drug lord.
Yeah, this guy's always taken out immediately. Like, I wouldn't even, if I were the drug lord and I was inside the house and somebody said, we have security, I'd be like, I don't even count those guys. Yeah. Every single movie I've ever seen, those guys are taken out in 10 minutes.
They're the equivalent, remember, Adam, tackling dummies, defensive drills in football?
Yes.
They might as well just not be there. Sure, it's like a figure, but you're not really doing much.
All right. What do we got? One more DFG?
Yeah, we can do one more.
Let's do one more.
But there's two good ones. But okay, what about adults who wear overalls? This is from my boy Ben Mitchell.
Adults that wear overalls. It can be hot on the right chick.
Yeah,
it can be a shit show on the wrong dude.
Mm-hmm. Think of, you know, Dukes of Hazzard.
Side boob.
Side boob is hot. I feel like overalls are something you need to earn. Like, there's nothing worse than hipster Hollywood dude who's wearing the big lineman boots, you know, with the big heel on them and the steel shank and the steel toe, and they lace all up. And then he's got his tight jeans and they're like rolled up at the bottom. Mm-hmm. I hate that dude. That dude has no business wearing a boot. He's never using it. He's basically like the same douche with the Jeep and the big lift kit and the big knobby tires on it who's never been camping and never been off-road. That guy's always the guy who's 5'9 and a half, and he's a boot guy, but he's really just, I need another 2 inches guy. So that douche walks around, and I feel like that guy.
That is the greatest story I have ever heard.
Danny was a cowboy booter, but yes, I.
At least you rode a motorcycle.
Yes. I worked construction, and I feel like I earned my boots, and I feel like if you're going to wear coveralls, you got to earn your coveralls. You got to operate a train, you got to work on a farm or something, and for that reason, I go JV.
Yeah, we should go different on this one because we're tied. So I agree with everything you said. However, the benefit outweighs the negative in the sense that we alluded to earlier, the hot chick and the overalls. That's worth 20 of those douchebags walking around with the boots and the overalls. I'll take it on the rare chance that I get to see a girl wearing those. All balls.
I always thought overalls on adults were ridiculous. However, when I stepped into the preschool classroom the first day taking a child to preschool and saw all the hot Encino moms in their hot little overalls, I didn't realize until last September, apparently overalls on adults are all balls.
Oh, and yeah, let's not forget Dexy's Midnight Runners.
That's right.
There was heavily laden with overalls. All right, clean up your screen, Max Zapata, please. All right, here we go, DFG.
Two all balls and one JV.
All right. I'm going to go. This is for my love of wrestling and one of my favorite dudes. Hillbilly Jim.
Okay.
Hillbilly Jim. I got to go all balls.
Nice. Oh, that guy kicked ass in overalls.
I didn't even think about the lady angle. I was just thinking about Hillbilly Jim.
Well, Brian, that it may be the gayest thought ever, but it could be the straightest thought ever simultaneously.
You know what? Of all the 80s, 90s wrestling was steeped in homoeroticism. Hillbilly Jim wasn't that homoerotic. He was just a fucking hillbilly who wore overalls, the big old beard and shaggy hair. And he
was a good dude, just a solid dude.
Well, he'll be missed. Deaf Rat Guy, everyone. And by the way, his friend Josh Gardner has a new single out called Mr. Macho Man. And you can listen to that on YouTube and you can shoot him a tweet. Give him some JV or all balls at Deaf Frat Guy. Do we have an outro or?
Oh, thank you.
That was JV or all balls with Deaf Frat Guy. Brought to you by Mangria.
All right, let me hit features. I love features. Changing your socks can make a huge difference in your daily walks or your hikes, you know, if you're hitting the trail. Mm-hmm. Or if you're hitting the links, why not? Why not features? These things are great. They sent over a pair. They're kind of a game changer. They make a difference. I think a lot of people think a lot about their shoes, but they don't think enough about their socks. Well, why wouldn't you think about your socks if you're thinking so much about your shoes? Your socks are closer to your tootsies than your shoes are. Targeted compression hugs your arch, keeping the sock in place, preventing bunching or slipping or sliding down into your shoe. Reduces discomfort and prevents blisters so you can focus. And they have a sock made especially for golfers. So if you want to up that game and up that focus, do it with features. You're looking for that edge. Let's get that edge. Lifetime guarantee. If you're unsatisfied at any point, they'll give you a replacement pair. No questions asked. Proud family-owned business right out of North Carolina. Features, right, Dawson?
Features socks will change how you feel about socks forever. And you can get $10 off your first pair of features when you use code Adam at features.com. That's FEETURES.com. Promo code Adam for $10 off your first pair of features.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Eric Vaughn and Patrick Lovell. It's L-O-V-E-L-L. Isn't there an astronaut with that name? Anyway, they got a five.
Jim Lovell.
Yeah, got a five-part docuseries, which is really good, called The Con. And it's about the crisis and the financial crisis of 2008 and all the big, scary people that made all the money while all the little guys got screwed. Spoiler alert. So we'll get all into that. And by the way, how it may, a lot of similarities to what's going on right now, and we'll do that with those two experts right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for a brand new month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This shipment includes a bug bite thing to suck out any mosquito bites you get while drinking Mangria in the summer sun. A you can frisbee here frisbee, perfect for tossing at the beaches Newsom won't let you go to. An ACS koozie to keep your beer cold. And most importantly, let people know that this beer is yours. A ready patch for those who get a little rosy from drinking too many cold beers. And, of course, a bottle of your choice. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Order one or keep the shipments coming at CorollaDrinks.com.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Lower Nazareth Township, Pennsylvania. A 51-year-old man was charged with making terrorist threats, assault, disorderly conduct, and harassment after wielding a machete and threatening his neighbors because they were lighting fireworks. Definitely not a Jew.
Well, we got a couple of filmmakers here. Eric Vaughn, Patrick Lovell has joined us virtually. The Con is the name of the five-part docu-series, which will be in virtual cinemas August 7th and available for digital rental on August 21st, I should say. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Was this, Patrick, was this your idea initially?
I just got wiped out in the 2008 Great Financial Crisis, and I was trying to figure out what happened. And 9 years later, we did.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean by wiped out? I mean, without getting into the nitty gritty, what did 401k savings?
I went through foreclosure like millions of other people. Wow. I've been a producer for a long time, and I was in, actually at that time, I was about to be 40 years old, and I was, still am, thankfully, and actually it's a miracle that I still am considering what we went through. But married, young son at the time, and like millions of other people, man, it was like I went from living the American dream to the American nightmare overnight, and it didn't add up, and now it does.
We'll get to that and how it adds up. Yeah, I had young twins at the time, and I lost my job, and I remember thinking my entire radio career that I was going to get shit canned because of something I said, but then I would just move to another job. So I would say something horrible on the air, possibly about Asians, and then have to leave. And then, I would get picked up by another radio station. Like, so I would be a player that would get cut from one team and picked up by another team because I was a good player. But I didn't know the whole league was going to collapse. I didn't count on that. And I had the same thing. There was no more. I'd worked in radio for 15 years. There were zero jobs in radio. And I had, I guess, 2-year-old twins or 1-year-old twins at the time. So,
one or two.
Yeah. Anyway, Eric.
It was February of 09.
February of 09. Shit. Let's see. They were born in 07? Oh, 06.
Oh, well, now
yeah,
we're
whatever the fuck. Who knows? Anyway, who cares about those shits? Sorry. And Eric, sorry. What brought you in?
Kind of a funny thing. I guess you could almost say that Patrick and I were some of the first job losses from the Great Financial Crisis. We were actually producers on a reality television show that was about giving away homes to young or whatever deserving people. That kind of thing is called Home Team. It's no longer around, but obviously. And what we didn't realize at the time was that it was underwritten by a subprime lender.
Mm.
Right.
Wow.
And so when we had just finished like our most successful season ever. We had the best numbers ever. In fact, Patrick down there, he had one of the episodes that he produced like killed it in New York. And so we were flying high. We're about ready to renegotiate our contracts and this and that and the next thing. And then next thing you know, it's like you find out, oh, we're letting everybody go. We're stopping production and have a nice day. So,
Brian,
that was March of what, 2007? Something.
Yeah, like right when the whole thing started to deconstruct. Yeah,
Brian found out he was out of a job, and then found out he had an inoperable brain tumor 10 minutes after he found out he was out of a job. So that was.
It was about a month later. It was about a month and a half later.
We don't want to be a one upper.
Yeah. So you guys think he had it hard? Oh, my reality show went away.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me show you this scar right
here. So can I ask
Gina, we have to ask, where were you? Where were you when the economy collapsed?
Three of us were on the same station. We all lost our jobs on the same
that's right.
day, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, I was effed in the A. I had no
words. You have
work.
Pictures?
I'm sure I have a mural. Somewhere. Yeah, no, I was living essentially in Skid Row, bordering Echo Park in downtown. I was kicking chickens away from my door. I had to ask gangbangers to please get their Slurpees off my car. I was escorted home at night by police officers who would walk behind me so people wouldn't know I was with them. I was flat out broke. And I had a little bit of unemployment. I think it was like $200 a week, and just made it work until my next radio gig.
You had options, though, Gina.
Hey, everybody. She's out of work, and I hope you're ready to jerk. We got some, I don't know what's behind. I don't know the alphabet. Whatever's behind an I cup. I think Gina's rocking those. Jade, stage four, Jade. So, what happened? What give us the gestalt, the Reader's Digest version of what happened with the financial crisis of 08, we'll just call it.
All right. Well, let's see. Let me try to give us this the quickest run possible. So you had a bunch of non-bank lenders, you know, places like Countrywide or Ameriquest or what have you, who had just transmuted themselves from a lot of the fraudulent SNLs from the SNL crisis that kind of preceded things back in the late 80s, early 90s. So they basically learned their technology during the SNL crisis. One of them managed to make it out without being prosecuted. That was Ameriquest. And Ameriquest started to take this fraud scheme that they were using in the SNL crisis and apply it to mortgages. And so in so doing, they had to drop their charter because they were an SNL, which means that they were federally regulated. And so in order to avoid regulation, they dropped their insurance, which means that the federal government was no longer going to insure anybody's deposits within the SNL. And so that put them effectively in what's quote unquote called the shadow sector, where there was basically no regulation, no law enforcement, that sort of thing. And they managed to create this, recreate that same fraud scheme with mortgages and start offering mortgages to people quite often through fraudulent means. And the way that they got their money, since they were no longer insured, is that Wall Street banks would create what are called warehouse lines to funnel money into these mortgage companies to go and sell all these bad mortgages, so that they could make money on the other side. And the really interesting thing about that is how they make money. Because when you're selling bad mortgages, ostensibly speaking, those mortgages are going to like not get paid, right? Which means that the money's going to come through. However, that's where accounting comes in. Basically, once you sell the mortgage and you like go through the whole process of getting it, you know, tied down and wrapped up and underwritten, blah, blah, blah. And there's a whole process for that, by the way. You're able to call those profits.
Right.
And so any bank manager, bank CEO who ran any of these places were able to extract bonuses based on these profits that have not been realized yet. And that's basically how they made money. They basically robbed their own banks.
Do you guys...
And that happened.
Sorry, but here's a kind of overall gestalt-y sort of societal, psychological question. I've often thought about the dangers of making money invisible. And money's invisible to, like, my kids. My daughter has a phone. And it was a funny thing. I was petting my dog, Phil, today, 110-pound black lab. And I was lamenting that Phil doesn't really like me anymore. He hangs out with my son. He doesn't sleep with me anymore. He's not cool with me. And my son said, that's because I give him all the treats. I'm in charge of giving him the treats. That's why he loves me. And I looked at Phil and I said, I wish you could understand who pays for the treats. Because then you would love me. Right now, you got no time for me. You got all time for the guy who hands out the treats, but not the person who pays for the treats. And I said, by the way, that's universal. I wish my daughter understood who was paying for the treats. And we transitioned from a real tangible dollar and change, or, you know, ingots or pieces of eight or whatever, pelts. We went right through to this digital world where you just hear, oh, $10 billion got transferred into blah, blah. And we go, yeah, okay. Or the debt, $200 billion. Like, that's going to cost every American $13,000. Oh, like, we just, like, it's all numbers just flying all around. And we're so, we're not, maybe my kids will be acclimated to it. We weren't ready for this. I started off with a Sparklets bottle filled with change. You know what I mean? Like, as a kid, and now everything's just electronic transfer, and you know, you sign something on your phone and press send. Like, are these guys able to get away with murder because society, you know, Congress, they barely know how to work the internet. You know, I mean, they don't, you hear these guys interviewing, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, and they're like, listen, Sonny, 22 Skidoo. Now, what's this say? I got a flip phone. How does this work again? Like, we're so far behind. They know we're behind. The smart guys with the digital shit and the money know we don't know what the fuck's going on. Is that a fair statement?
I think you nailed it. And with you into it, the what everybody knows the system's rigged. Everybody knows that somebody's corrupt. They just don't know who did what, when, and how. And what our story is really, it's a murder story. It's the murder of the American dream. But it's got tangible faces every step of the way. When you guys started talking about your own experiences in 2008, yeah, I got wiped out. I was on the edge of my fingers, man. You know, I didn't know which way was up, and nothing made sense, especially from media or the government, right? And right. To your point, Adam, it was like, okay, look, I'm a guy that grew up same time period, listening to you, quite frankly, in LA a lot. And, you know, I would like to think I wasn't naive. I mean, come on, growing up in the 80s, we know of like Pablo Escobar and Michael Milken and Wall Street, but I think we all believed in the end, the long arm of the law would catch up to criminality. At least that's what we saw in Hollywood films, right? Well, as it turns out, no, that's not the case, man. The bad guys took over and they ran away with it because nobody understands who did what, when, and how, and what they got away with until now.
Brian had a question, then Gina, I think.
I had a follow-up for Eric and what he was just talking about. When you talk about executives taking bonuses based on unrealized profits, future profits, I'm guessing, is that kind of Ponzi scheme-ish, or was ostensibly were they going to realize those profits had everything gone well and the bottom not fell out? Like, would that have been like a legit thing, or was it always doomed?
No. You're exactly right. I mean, as far as like Ponzi scheme, yeah, it very much smells like a Ponzi scheme, and that's exactly how they treated it. I mean, when you know that you are putting people into loans, and quite often fraudulently putting them into loans, and like everybody talks about, like you know, like all these like homeowners were trying to get too much house and so on and so forth. They don't know what's required on the paperwork. That was all coming from the brokers. That was all coming from the mortgage lenders. And so when you know that you're putting out bad loans that you know are never going to be paid, then of course it's a Ponzi scheme. Of course you're purposefully extracting those profits, knowing that the bank is never going to get it. But you do have this knowledge because at some point, Mr. Greenspan, in an announcement, basically said, for all intents and purposes, if the banks ever failed, we got your back. You're all good. So that, to a large extent, that provided cover. So it's like, oh, yeah, go and steal from your own bank all you want because the Fed will help pay back. We'll pay it back anyway.
Has anyone been prosecuted? Is there anybody who's going to take a fall for this?
Huge prosecutions. There's Fabulous Fab, who was like a mid-level trader.
That's exactly.
Right.
And I think it was a small family-owned bank in Chinatown.
Yeah.
So all the major players.
This is kind of my question, and I think I speak for most of America when I say that, you know, especially in our age group, our first look into this and really breaking it down was the movie Big Short. So I'm curious, first of all, how close you think they got it, really trying to distill this for the rest of us. And also, you just kind of proved what I was thinking, which was when Tony Soprano sits down and you want to talk to him, he immediately gets up and leaves the table and brings in his underboss. So were the CEOs so completely insulated that you're never going to get the guy at the top?
Yeah. This country is more and more run off of a simple phrase, and that phrase being plausible deniability.
Right.
And so that's the beauty of Office of Thrift Supervision, this tiny little regulatory agency in the government did during the S&L crisis, is that they identified what was going on as accounting control fraud, right? And the beauty about accounting control fraud, if you're like one of these fraudsters, is that who likes accounting? It's like the most boring thing ever. Nobody has the patience to go and sit through stacks of papers in order to find out what the heck's going on. And so that's like one of the major beauties of it. And you have people who don't even know how to look at these who are kind of pushing the buttons at the government level.
Brian?
You guys are documentary filmmakers, and this is obviously an area of expertise at this point. You spent, I don't even know how many hours putting this together. Have you guys, and you mentioned the prosecutions being a lot of mid-level, not the big, you know, the big fish. Have you guys heard of a documentary or even seen Abacus, Too Small to Jail?
Yeah,
it's a great documentary. It's about, Adam, it's about the only financial institution that was prosecuted at the time in 2017 for during the crisis was this very small family-run Asian lending corp, basically, right? That basically only dealt with like the Asian community. They're a very important part of their community because a lot of the native speakers couldn't go to the big banks.
And the funny thing is that they actually got busted because they self-reported. One of the brokers was doing something. They did the right thing and self-reported. And so then all of a sudden, the feds come down.
No good deed.
To answer the question that Gene asked about The Big Short, look, I love The Big Short, but it's categorized as a comedy. I don't know what's funny about tens of millions of people losing everything and all the calamity that you see, particularly in Southern California with homelessness. A lot of it attributed to this, by the way. But, you know, in terms of prosecutions, that's the whole point of what we found through a tragedy. Eric had the presence of mind of actually he relocated his production company. We've been partners for a long time, but he was located in Southern California and he went back to Ohio. And we had gotten the top part of the story. Let's call it the C-suite view in whistleblowers and things that were happening and maneuvering in quite frankly, a financialized way like The Big Short. And Eric kept saying, "Now, guys, this is a crime. This is a street crime. Let's figure out what that looks like." And so he started exploring that and he found a woman who became, through a tragedy, our protagonist and our muse. And she was an African-American woman, 91 years old, on the day that they came to evict her from a house that she lived in over four decades, that she and her husband had worked incredibly hard to own because they had migrated from the agrarian South to the industrial Midwest as part of that World War II generation. They owned their house. They owned it outright. And in the end, she's standing after her husband passes away, with the sheriff coming to evict her. She ends up shooting herself in the chest 5 times and trying to avoid homelessness, I guess, is one way we could think about it. And as we started to investigate this story and what it led to, it miraculously opened up this door to us that there was a white-collar task force in Ohio, Summit County, Ohio, all of this within about a 2-mile radius of where Eric put his new production company. And as it turns out, these guys did a multi-year investigation, put all the pieces together correctly, and came up with a RICO conviction of the same crime that was happening throughout the country. And to your point, Gina, the exact same crime that the CEOs of Wall Street were perpetrating. But in this case, they got RICO, and the Department of Justice decided to let them get away with a big, 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 big bailout.
The, you know, it was kind of an interesting, I had a exchange with attorney Mark Garagos that we played a little earlier in the show, but I was explaining about some trials and tribulations I was going through with the city and going through with this. And Mark always says, why don't you just reach out to me? I would have been able to take care of it. I'll handle it. And I always say to him, thank you. But what about all the people that don't know you? You know what I mean? Like, no one has this, people don't realize, they don't have access to this information. They don't have someone, they don't have the connections, they don't have the relationships. You know, part of having some success is knowing a Mark Garagos and being able to call him and go, hey, Mark, here's what's going on. Give me, and that guy will save your life. Or calling Dr. Drew and going, here's what's going on. What do you got? But most people, and especially financially, people just don't have those relationships, and they don't have anyone in their immediate family who has them either. And it's just sign here, and you've just signed away a 22% loan on a credit card that you could never possibly pay off. And there's so much of that predatory behavior. And it's also people that know, you know, when you want to get your shoes shined at the airport, you go, here's $10, and then you watch the guy shine your shoes, and he either does a good job or a shitty job, or maybe you don't give him the $10 until after he does a kick-ass job, and then you give him the $10, and we can all do that. This financial shit is an enigma wrapped in a mystery to almost everybody I know. Nobody has any proper financial education. Most people don't know the difference between gross and net. And it should be taught. It should be taught starting in the fifth grade. It is avoided. We talk about wars that took place, 300 years ago. We never get into this subject. I don't know if that's part of a conspiracy to have all these needy, financially illiterate people just to walk onto college campuses or go into a Home Depot and sign up for a credit card they can't afford or whatever it is. But we are cranking out masses of people that have no literacy financially with finances at all. And at a certain point, we're going to have to start focusing on the school boards. Like, at a certain point, you guys got to start teaching some of this stuff. We're going to have to talk about it. I took ceramics classes. I took home ec classes. I took a thousand, history classes. I never took anything that had to do with finances, or I was completely literate and preyed upon the second I left North Hollywood High. Would you guys like to address that?
All right. Well, I think there was a Nobel Prize winning economist. It was a George Akerlof, and was it Romer?
Who
had described this concept, and it's really kind of funny because they have like these genius brains who describe something where when you really think about it, it's just kind of common sense. But what they described was called the asymmetric information and the dangers of asymmetric information within a market economy. And basically what that is that if you know more about the product that you're selling than the person that you're selling it to, and you don't convey that information, you're in a position basically to defraud that person. And so, I don't want to subscribe some sort of, crazy, plot against America in this regard, but there's certainly an advantage by having a naive, public.
Right.
In that you can take advantage of them. Mm-hmm. It's easy to take advantage of people who do not have that kind of knowledge.
When Gina and I were respective freshmen in college, all you saw were just booths and stands. Like, oh, sign up for this credit card. And there's no doubt, there's literally no doubt in my mind that the financial institutions benefit from ignorance. Now, if you want to educate yourself, that's up to you. But of course they benefit from your ignorance. You're 18 years old and you're running up a credit card bill like, oh, free money.
To Brian's point, and I can't believe they were ever allowed on campuses, especially during freshman orientation week, which is when when they really set up in the quad. My mom is a banker, and I was 18 and came home and told her I signed up for a credit card. And mom, I got approved for like a platinum card. And she freaked out. And she goes, well, what did they give you? And I go, a slinky, a rainbow slinky. It's huge. It's like three times the size of a regular. And she lost it. And she wasn't yelling at me. You don't yell at the 5-year-old that you give the car keys to. You know, she was going, so this is what they're doing on these campuses. Well, good luck to both of you. You know, she was fuming, and she was right to be fuming. The APR was like 39%. I had no idea what was going on. So to Brian's point, they set up on college campus. They give out tchotchkes and you go, oh yeah, I guess I got 5 minutes before the next orientation starts.
Well, to that point, I mean, and also to bridge that to what Eric was talking about, this guy Akerlov, his you know, incredible worldwide recognition came from the title Fishing for Fools, mm-hmm. exactly what you're talking about. And as we pulled this thread and we went down this pathway, I mean, I basically got a brand new education in reality. I had no idea this was the thing that was happening behind the scenes, right, as our country evolved from the 80s onward. And what we learned was this was all part of the administrations in succession from Reagan all the way through Clinton, particularly, that led to what we call the 3 Ds: deregulation, desupervision, and decriminalization. And so what that did was that just enabled this black box of stuff that, Adam, you were talking about. In fact, all of us are talking about this, of deception, really. And what it is if you don't understand, you're being set up, right? So, for example, after the 2008 great financial crisis, most of media, particularly on the conservative side, were blaming people for using their houses as ATMs and so forth. Well, there was a method to that madness. And quite frankly, the industry itself had, in their own words, a business model. And it was to predate on the weak, the meek, and the ignorant. That was in their words, right?
Right.
And so they went after, literally, African-American widows that had equity in their home.
Oh, yeah.
That was a business model. So they literally targeted, we've got so much more information about that, but that literally is like the domino in our head. So as we went through this path over the course of years, it was like we opened up one Pandora's box to the other. And in the end, what we found out, and you really, Adam, you nailed it. You should, all of us should be educated to this because we're all affected no matter who we are.
You know,
and that's why we did this, because we've got 5.5 hours that will show you exactly what happened and who did what, when, and how. So you go from common knowledge. In fact, I'll ask you, Eric, to comment about that.
Well, can I say this? I think there's a stigma around money, and we all grow up with it. And it's kind of the problem, as I experienced hosting Loveline for all those years. People feel weird about talking about sex, and they feel equally as weird talking about money. And it's, you know, you go, don't ask, you know, and you start asking, what do you make or how much or whatever. It's like, don't be rude. You know what I mean? And so money is a little taboo-y, and it is a little energy around it. And so as a society, kind of like sex, we've kind of went like, don't ask too many questions. It's rude to ask too many questions. And so we all kind of grow up in that religion in a way. If you just applied it to being Mormon and sex or something like that, it's a kind of the same thing. Like it's a touchy subject. Don't ask questions. And much like sex, some, you know, it's not really even properly taught in school. And so then you have this public who thinks you can, you know, pull out, and that's birth control, and who thinks you can sign up for a platinum credit card when you're 19. Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
Oh, no. Actually, you bring up a really good point, and that very much describes the situation that Addie Polk, you know, one of the main subjects of our entire series, we follow her story from episode one all the way through to episode five, is that all of her friends and the people within her church described her as somebody who was kept to herself about personal things. And the intuition there was that it was money. She never talked about money, and that, you know, she was left two pensions. Her husband, Robert, had passed away, but he had worked his entire life at two rubber factories. And so she was drawing from that. And but just to get to the point, that she never talked about those things. And that was one of the reasons why she was so isolated when the sheriffs were coming to evict her. And she had nowhere to go, nobody to talk to because of that taboo. She would not talk about it with anybody. And so she was basically left alone and left to her own devices.
Eric, comment about common knowledge versus specific knowledge.
Absolutely. So when we were designing how we wanted to build this documentary, one of the things that I did is I looked towards the story of Spotlight, you know, the Boston Herald who broke the priest sex abuse scandal. And one of the things that they talked about there was about common knowledge, how, you know, there's always, I grew up Catholic, and I still go to church every now and then. And, but I remember growing up is that I would always hear the rumors. It's like, it'd be a joke, right? About priests, you know, messing around with altar boys and stuff like that. It's just sort of like this joke therapy, just sort of ha ha ha. And nobody really did anything about it because there are no names, there are no dates, there are no places. Well, then Spotlight occurs and all of a sudden there's names, there's dates, there's places. And this common knowledge that everybody had about this thing happening became specific knowledge. And when it became specific knowledge, then all of a sudden there was something to act upon. And people came out of the woodwork to say, this is wrong. This is, you know, and all of a sudden it became a movement, right?
Right.
And so we very much, like in our deepest, you know, parts of our little artist souls, hope that's our big hope with this.
Right.
Is that we're taking the common knowledge that everybody knows that bankers are, you know, screwing us and blah, 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 and turn that into specific knowledge and saying, okay, these are the actual issues. This is stuff that's actually happening. Let's do something about it.
Well, you know, it's an interesting time we're living in that everybody, you know, can do a podcast. We don't need the antenna on top of the hill and the broadcasting license from the FCC. And you can drive Uber. You don't need a medallion from the city anymore. You know, I'll weave this into what we're doing. You know, Bill Cosby is in jail right now because Hannibal Buress would speak about him in his stand-up comedy act. I don't know how much of that you guys know about, but he grabbed a stand-up comedian, starts talking about somebody's behavior in a nightclub, and 3 years later, the guy's sitting in a courthouse in Philadelphia, you know? I mean, maybe the people should be doing it for themselves a little bit here. I mean, maybe with social media and everything. Obviously, the feds, you know, whatever. There's countless. First off, when you get sued by the patent trolls, as I have been, you realize, oh, it's a big fat fucking system. You don't have. It's not like the patent trolls and the judges and the attorneys who are defending me. They all go to the same country club on Sundays. They're not looking out for you. They're all in. They're in that snow globe, and you're outside of it. And you naively think this judge is going to do something for you, or the sheriff, or this councilman, or you know, where I'm going to call my senator. They're all in it. They're on the same side. It's like there's cowboys and Indians in a movie you would watch when you're a kid and you thought they were fighting, but when lunch came around they all just sat at the same table and ate craft service. That's exactly what we're dealing with here. But we're watching the movie. We're going, okay, my guy's gonna get their guy. No, they're all the same guy. They're wearing different outfits. And maybe it's time for us to do it for ourselves. Guys like you, guys like Hannibal Buress, guys who start, maybe this is, there's countless other examples, I think, now. Maybe this is the new world order.
Adam, you nailed it, man. And I just have to applaud you for that, because it reminded me, of course, of George Carlin, right? And his shtick, it's a big club and you're not in it. If you've ever heard that, and if you haven't, please go online and watch it. That's what we found, man. I mean, look, over the course of our lifetimes, but particularly after the collapse of 2008, that circle has just gotten smaller and smaller, and it's a noose around the neck of the integrity of law and also freedom in terms of, you know, everything that we think we are, right? Supply, demand. Do we think we have demand right now in the COVID age?
Right.
Who's paying to prop up this country right now? It's the Fed.
Right.
What is the money going to? Is it going to the 30 million people that are unemployed? Are they churning and burning? No, they're going to reduce that. But if you really understand the numbers, and this correlates to what our story is, because it wasn't fixed in 2008, it just got worse today. This is an inevitable conclusion of what didn't get fixed before. So we all know, right, that if you let a gangster on the side of a corner get away with it and you take the cops off the beat, the criminals win every time.
Well, and to your point, and I don't mean to sound so cynical because there has to be a way out of this eventually. But when Adam brought up, you know, I was thinking, oh, Cosby, Weinstein, when you were talking. And when Adam brought up Cosby, I'm thinking, yeah, but we didn't have to start by making rape illegal. You right. know, so at this point, we have to start from way behind the starting line. So that's what feels so hopeless.
Well, let me address that real quick. And Eric, I'll turn it over to you in a second. But we're actually in the mix of this right now. So in our series, we just went to all the right people that got this thing right. So trust me, there's tens of thousands of people throughout the country that are heroes that got this right. They were just suborned. And so we're not just talking about average everyday Americans that were victims. We're talking about people in the system that tried to do the right thing every step of the way. There were whistleblowers. And we have whistleblowers that are the most crucial whistleblowers in this entire story, guys that were in the C-suites at Countrywide, the C-suites of Citibank, the C-suites of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And quite frankly, we have the former director of investigations for the FBI, third in command of the FBI, right underneath at that time, Mueller and Comey. And this guy had this thing dead to rights as early as 2004. They were trying to do a national sweep to end this. And what happened was he got stopped by higher-ups that are all still in Congress today, quite frankly. They stopped the funding for it. And we have him on camera. And we also have another gentleman from the Department of Justice who was third. Actually, he was in charge of white-collar investigations for the Department of Justice.
He was right under Lanny Brewer.
Right under Lanny Brewer during the Obama administration with Eric Holder. And so, you know, all of these administrations were in it. It's complex to a degree, but really in the end, it's not rocket science. You just have to see it. I mean, it's the chronology of it and to understand what it led to. And really in the end, when you have a powerful system that's able to circle the wagons around it, because as you just mentioned, Gina, I think the perfect analogy is Epstein and Weinstein. All of those scenarios took place over the course of decades, right? So we know that the prosecutors had information on Weinstein. We know that, you know, guys in Florida had stuff on Epstein. Why didn't they prosecute him? Well, because there was powerful people preventing them from prosecuting him. This is a variation of that as well. But we're talking about something that literally devastated tens of millions of people and cost trillions of dollars to try to clean up, only to take us right back to the same story.
We need to prepare for a break here, but I want to give you guys a plug before we bid you adieu. The 5-part docuseries, The Con, and it comes out on virtual cinemas August 7th, and then it's available for digital rental on the 21st of August, and you can go to the website, thecon.tv. And yeah, I think it's time, you know, that people educate themselves, and we see the physical version of people sort of taking to the streets, but we now need to do a sort of digital version of taking to the streets where people educate themselves, like going out and marching and tearing down statues and shit. It's all well and good, but if you go home and turn on the TV and you're just as dumb as you were the day before, or you need to be fluent in a language, which is a financial language that no one is fluent in. Everyone needs to speak finances as a second language, and nobody learns it. Everyone learns Spanish or French or German. They don't learn this second language. And we're in a new world order where you can do all your banking from your phone. And if you don't start learning this as a second language, it should just be taught. My daughter's going into the 9th grade. She's taking Spanish as an elective, which is great, but take finances. It should all be taught as a second language. We should all be fluent in it for our travels around this great planet of ours. And otherwise, you'll be victimized by it. Yes.
Yeah. Can I just put a quick positive spin on all of this, given all that's going on? Everything is so divided and divisive, and we've never been farther apart in any way. And I'm going to posit this to Eric and Patrick. I'm going to guess that when it comes to all this criminal behavior and Congress and the feds, I'm going to guess that that is something that the Republicans and Democrats are working on together. Oh. That's something that they're both equally criminal in terms of this.
The only bipartisan agreement you ever get is on corruption. And I think right. equal to that, is that the only bipartisan agreement you can have in a polarized America at the moment is people knowing who's screwing them.
Yeah. And it's both.
Oh, yeah. It's baked into the bread. Eric, Patrick, thank you guys for joining us today. And Godspeed. We'll be watching. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Be well.
All right. Let me hit Mercari here. Speaking of making a little money, it's fast. It's an easy way to declutter your home and get paid a little bit. And this stuff doesn't end up in a landfill, which that's my whole thing. I just can't. I hate this throwaway world we've created, and Mercari is going to help solve that. In minutes, you can download Mercari, take pics of your stuff, add a description, and then it's listed just like that. Once it's sold, Mercari emails a shipping label, and you stick it on the box, and you ship it from your home. No meetups, no hassles. Over 50 million downloads in all 50 states. You can try Mercari. Make that extra cash if we're talking about. Be smart. This will be the first step in you being literate financially. Sell and buy almost anything from home, and you can find it at the App Store, or you can go to Mercari.com. That's M-E-R-C-A-R-I. Mercari, America's no meetup marketplace. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Gina and Bald in the news right after this. And before we get out of here, one more thanks to Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? What do you do? Do you want a bundle? Well, you own or you rent, or you got to have insurance. You got to have auto insurance. Bundle it. Make it easy. Save money. Let's get it under one roof at Geico. At geico.com, get a quote. See just how much you could be saving on your homeowners and your rental insurance when you bundle. That's Geico, geico.com.